Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm Russ Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Robert?
I'm feeling the power of friendship.
Really?
Yes. Because today's guest is not only an incredible artist who's been making work for over 50 years, mm-hmm. but in the last 6 months or so, we've actually become really good friends. Mm-hmm. And I have so much love for her. I initially came to her work through an artist that we work with at Carl Friedman Gallery called Peter Vermeersch, mm-hmm. and his incredible wife, who's a really well-respected international curator, Lilou Vidal. And they were renting an apartment very close or within a building that today's guest owned. And they said to me, have you heard of this artist? She's incredible. She's in her 80s and she's been making work for over 50 years. And she's kind of undiscovered. Like, people don't really know her outside of Belgium. There are people in Belgium that knew her work, but you know, otherwise wasn't really being exhibited internationally. Mm. So we started to look at her work, Carl and I, and we fell in love with it. And then recently Zoe Badeau, the curator, did a show in Margate.
Former guest on Talk Art.
Yeah, which was called Gossamer. And it was about the history of the material of tights being used in art for different social reasons and political reasons. And we did this incredible show with 22 artists. And one of those artists who ended up being the kind of big
breakout star
of the show in a way was Marianne Berenhout.
Yeah,
so I'm just really thrilled. I've actually never been to Marianne's house before. And we're currently in West London, in very near West Kensington, in a beautiful apartment building, looking out over West London right now.
Yeah.
And it brought back quite a lot of memories because it's actually somewhere where I used to do gigs in the West 14 Songwriters Club in about 1998. Mm-hmm. So I used to spend a lot of time in this area when I was a late teenager. Yeah, it's really funny. Yes, we've made the journey here. And I would like to welcome to Talk Art, Marianne Berenhout.
How are you?
Well, I'm fine, thank you. I'm very pleased to vous accueillir, which means to greet you inside my flat. And I moved to London when I was 80. And of course, people say it was very brave. And I have not the feeling of bravery at all. I think being very slow all my life, even when I was young, I've always been slow. I think I had a dream and I wanted to fulfill that dream, and that's coming back to London. And which I did when it took me some time when I was 80.
So currently you're about 85, is that correct?
No, I'm 85 and a half.
85 and a half. So that means 5.5 years ago, at the age of 80, you moved to London.
Yeah.
So prior to that, you'd been living in Belgium.
Yeah.
And I love this idea that you had the dream of living in London. So you moved at that age.
Yeah. Well, when I was after the war, we had quite, because I've got a twin brother, actually. But we have quite a long history, family history. But after the war, my uncle, which is my father's brother, found us through the Red Cross. Actually, this flat is his flat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's a family flat. So that's why I can afford living in such a posh area.
Because
it's a kind of family flat. And,
wow.
You know, I don't... he kind of knew his brother because, of course, through the war, etc., everything was broken up. I mean, it's not the only thing, but... and he found us, he brought us here in the UK, and we were... And then we are Jew, Polish... I haven't got at all a Jewish culture. I think I did it on purpose. And perhaps I'll tell you my story a bit later
please.
On.
Yeah.
Not to have anything... I mean, I, I'm proud to be Jews, but I have no Jewish culture at all.
Yeah.
And didn't want to have one, I suppose. Uh-huh. But
what age was you when you came to London the first time then, when your uncle found you with the Red Cross?
Yeah,
how old was you and your twin?
It was in 1947, right. And I was born, because I'm not very good, I was born in 1934.
Right. So prior to that, so the war split you up from your family?
Yeah, but I mean, it split up. It killed the war. I mean, wars are awful things altogether, whatever wars it is, there's lots of it all over the world. I think that the most awful thing that happened to a human being. Mm. And how do they do that? I just don't understand. I can't believe it. They're killing people, they're destroying families, they've destroyed, of course, thousands and thousands and million of Jews, but other people too. I mean, you know, even the German who were against, they were the first one in the camp. Yeah. I mean, if you know the history, I can't believe that people now are still making wars, and Trump is an example. I mean, for instance.
I know people don't seem to learn, do they, from the past?
They seem to forget their own history. I mean, as if it didn't exist, you know, but it does exist. I mean, what frightened me is that the far right wing is getting up all over Europe, and that's frightful. I mean, it's really scaring, and it's unbelievable.
What was your story? Why did you and your twin get separated from the rest of your family when you were a kid?
I'm not used to tell my story, and of course, we were all our family. That means a tiny family. I mean, my father, mother, my father, my big brother, my eldest brother, and we lived together. My father was in Brussels, and my father was an engineer, that makes beer, you know what I mean?
Oh, really? A brewery?
Well, he was employed in a brewery.
Wow.
Make the barrels and stuff, or make the actual beer?
No, I suppose he was employed in that brewery.
Right.
And my mother was an engineer too, I mean, but she was taking care of us, and they were, how do you say, they were betrayed, no? Well, someone told
like
the
reported
Nazi,
them. Yeah, told the Nazis about them
about
and where they
them.
Were.
And before that, they put us, my brother and myself, in a Catholic orphan, because they knew something was threatening, you know.
Right. So they took you and your twin brother to an orphanage?
Yeah, to an orphanage.
Which was run by a Roman Catholic church?
Yes, yes. And that's how, although I'm not at all a Christian or a Catholic, I must say, if you are alive, it's grâce, comment on dit grâce? It's because of those Catholic people who took care of us, and that took care of lots of Jews.
Children.
Yeah.
And in spite of, they were very in dangerous position, you know. But I mean, there were lots of people who were incredible at that time.
Yeah.
And my brother was also hidden from my parents, but he went to see my parents on that date, and there was a traitor who denounced him, and they were taken to, to the end.
Yeah, so sad. And how old were you at that point?
Well, when we were in the orphan, it was in 1940. My parents were killed, and my brother, my eldest brother, in 1942.
1942, okay.
Yeah.
So you were about eight or something, were you?
Yeah, I was point, I was eight.
Yeah.
I mean, we were eight.
But do you have memories of it?
No. The thing is, I have no memories at all. As if, I mean, when you had kind of a wound, very profound wound, I think you...
Your trauma. Yeah.
And I think your body and your soul or whatever it is, your mind, kind of covers it. And the way it covers it, for me, I have no memory of my parents. I have no memory, I mean, visual memory. Mm. I have no memory of my brother. I've hardly have any memory. And even now, I don't recognize people. Now, I know I will recognize you because yeah. I've seen you several times.
But even that, though, like sometimes when we would meet in Margate, you'd come into the gallery and the first initial response to seeing me, I could see that you don't immediately recognize me. But when you hear my voice is when you were like, oh, Robert. And I remember you like holding onto my arm and being excited because it was like you'd recognize me almost because you have like a kind of face blindness, don't you?
Yes, I'm face blind. And for instance, if I meet you in the street, I mean, that's an... if you go off now, straight away, come back, I will not recognize you. It's a bit of a strange thing.
Wow.
I mean, it is strange. But I think it's kind of protecting. I mean, it was a protective thing that happened to me, and I'm living with that now. But, I mean, that's it. I mean, and...
So your uncle found you and your twin...
After the war.
After the war, in an orphanage.
Yeah, because... He was in the Polish army, but to be in the Polish army, he had to be converted to Catholics.
Catholicism,
because, you know,
right.
The Polish, towards the Jews, were not very open, should I say.
Yeah.
And probably they're not now either. I mean, not all of them, but, you know, it's well known. I mean, and so he was in the... Polish army, and he was also a doctor. So in 1939, the Polish army, as you know, has been all dispersed and destroyed. And so he flew away with a car, and his wife and a friend, and they flew to Poland, Italy, and then they arrived at Biarritz in France somehow. I don't quite know how, but... And they meant to go to South America, but the last ship that left in Biarritz was to the UK. So they took that...
And you came to London?
Well, they were in a camp, but a camp where all the people were in, you know.
In the UK?
In the UK.
Yeah.
And then he had to repass, I suppose, a certain exam to be recognized as a UK doctor, which he was. And then he went to the Air Force. He fly in the Air Force Army, and he was a doctor. And that's how... And then he knew that his brother had three kids, I mean, us two, and so, but through the war, he couldn't get in touch, of course, you know. Mm. So it was after the war he got in touch with us, and then took us over here. And at that time, I didn't like UK at all. And it's a long, long, long time afterwards. It was like a dream. I don't know why.
You were ready to come back. You were ready to be here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm ready. But I must say that my uncle was mainly, he didn't have children of his own, nor his wife. And I suppose, like lots of Jewish person, he wanted for us to have the best education he could give us.
Yeah.
And so he put us in a boarding school, you know. Mm-hmm. But what we needed was love, and we were very retarded because we needed affection. We didn't, but he was a wonderful man. I mean, he is, and my aunt too. But he didn't quite understand what the the inner feeling was, you know, because he didn't have children of his own.
And also, I think it was probably quite a different time society-wise. If you think of the UK society or, you know, European society after the war, it was such a strong experience for people to go through. And then I think society was so much different back then, wasn't it? And I think people were less open, especially men as well. I think they were a lot stricter.
Less affectionate, you mean.
Yeah, and if he'd been in the army as well, it's kind of a different understanding of how to relate to people, isn't it?
Well, Prebek, he was a doctor too, you know, at the same time.
Oh, yeah, so he had that empathy and understanding. Yeah.
So, I mean, perhaps he did play somehow, you know. But he was a wonderful man, of course. Yeah.
So after the UK, you then went to Belgium?
I came back because we were kind of adopted by a family, which was before my uncle. I mean, it's a long story. I get a bit mixed up myself.
It's okay, so a family had adopted you in Belgium?
Yeah, because there was a family who rescued, a normal workers' family, who rescued a Jew child because her parents were taken in front of them, you know, and they pretend that it was their grandchild, you know, so that. And they put it in the same orphan where we were. And after my parents had been deported to Auschwitz-Birkenau, and my big brother, those people who adopted us, he worked as a chief worker in a garage, and it was in that same brewery.
Oh, wow.
And so he got the apartment where my parents lived.
Right.
But he didn't know that. I mean, he had the apartment of the engineer, because he worked. And when they bought that child who they adopted, they went to the nuns, Catholic nuns, and told them their address. And the nun said, well, that's funny. We've got two children at the same address.
No way.
And that's how
that's
kind
really,
of connected.
Wow.
So then they incredible. Then took you in as well?
So after a while, because people were very cautious. I mean, you never knew if you were a traitor or what kind.
Still,
so,
yeah.
I mean, you know, and then those religious nuns, they had to be there because they had lots of Jewish children there, you know.
Yeah.
And they would have been killed or whatever. So after a while, I imagine they told that lady, Albert Wilmot Strelens, and they told her that they had two kids, you know, and they told her, so they kind of adopted us as well, you know. But when I look at my whole life, I should say since the age of 8, I've never had a family life. I always have been in a boarding school, on pensions, or I've never had a family now. The first time I had, again, a family now, when I married Jacques.
You made your own family.
Yeah.
I made my own family.
Yeah.
And had my own kids.
Yeah.
So when did art come into your life?
Well, it came on very late because I met Jacques Simon, which was my husband, and we had a wonderful, I mean, we were very much in love. You know, I thought he was the best man of the world, and he thought I was the best woman, I suppose. And we had a wonderful love affair, and it came straight away, you know, just by chance. I remember how we met. That was in 1955.
Yeah.
And he was a painter. That's one of his paintings.
We're going to take a picture of
that. Yeah, so we're looking now at a painting, which is almost like a still life.
Is it?
Or five apples, yeah.
Is it five?
There's one hidden.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's one behind me.
Yeah, five apples on in a, like a box turned on its side, it looks
like. That was in 59. After that, he did abstract lyric painting.
Abstract painting.
Yeah, abstract lyric. Very wonderful. I mean, quite wonderful.
Yeah.
But that was an early in 59, I think. You know.
Wow. So was it your relationship with him that sort of started to teach you about art?
He was a painter.
Yeah.
But I didn't know, you know, because being, I didn't know anything about art. I didn't know anything about art school. I didn't know anything about university. I was really hopeless. But I hardly knew anything because I was in a poor, intellectual environment.
Right.
But it wasn't miserable for me because I didn't know, so I didn't miss anything. When I met Jack, he was a painter, although he was, his father was a very small worker, man too. He was a butcher. But he's the only butcher in Brussels who didn't make a fortune through the war because he always did the, you know, butchers made themselves very rich because the small amount of meat there, they sold it very high price.
Yes,
he didn't. He was so honest.
He sort of kept it for everybody.
Yeah. So, but Jacques was at the university and painting. And so it opened a world which I didn't even know it exists. You know,
wow.
It's like discovering. I was really amazed. But after a few years, I thought, well, I need to do something on my own. You know, I should do something. And that's how I started doing the maison sculpture, were kind of shelters. But they're big like that, you know. And
so they were kind of like, they were almost the height of someone's waist, maybe. Like, I'm trying to work out how.
Not even that.
But like storage,
even that
high. Like shelters, but, like bomb shelters.
I've got some in the catalogue.
Yeah.
I've got some.
Let's take a
look.
Is
it this catalogue here?
So shelters in what way, like?
Oh, where am I? Oh, gosh.
Is it that one?
Oh, it's that one there. Here we go.
Yeah, but I mean, it's in this one.
In that one there, okay.
It's in this one because it has this.
So this is a catalogue that was made for your show at the Jewish Museum in 2014.
Museum. And Hans, a friend of mine who did he told me to. Anstes, he wanted to make an historical part.
Yeah, of the book.
Of the book, before the exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
So he made an. And those are those kind. There were shelters, but actually.
So they've got the sculptures that can be inhabited, but they're like architectural models.
I've
imagined like shelters look like they're cut out of a mountainside or in a cave or.
Yeah, but I mean, I call them maison sculpture, which is house
sculptures.
House sculpture.
Yeah. That's the name of the series, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you made them between 1964 until 1969.
Yes, when I had the accident.
Yeah.
And it was made of. Those are heavy, how do you call them?
Slabs, sheets?
Concrete?
No, not concrete. There's
marble, plaster?
No, there's plaster, but they're on top of heavy
steel,
like
or
metal
material.
Yes. Okay.
And just quite heavy.
Mm-hmm. So it was like heavy metal kind of steel structures that you then covered in plaster.
And then I covered, I put some, you can't put plaster like that. You have to put it on material.
Okay.
And I made this, and I thought it was wonderful. I mean, but at that time, as I learned, I discovered what's art. I didn't know. I went to a school, an evening school, kind of thing. And the man, the teacher, was Muscal. And he was very, I don't know whether you know him, he's a very important architect in Belgium.
Mm-hmm. What's his name again?
Muscal.
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 Okay.
I've not heard of him before, actually, but yeah.
And but he was very strict, kind of very. And when he saw that work, he thought it was awful. I mean,
he
couldn't stand it. You know, he couldn't stand it. And at the end of the year, we had a jury, but all the other people, because he was very inventing and a new spirit in that old academy, you know.
Yes.
You know,
a fresh old energy coming in.
A fresh energy. Yeah. So all the other teachers didn't like him at all, you know. So when I went around to see the work, and I knew that because I had a friend who was Muscal's assistant, mm-hmm. she told me afterwards, they went around the studio where we were all the works, and my work was a bit out without light. And the teacher said, "What's that?" Oh, he said, "That's rubbish. Don't take any notes." And as they were,
did you hear him say that? Or you were told?
No, the assistant told her. Yeah.
And then as the other teacher were kind of against him, you know.
Oh, they wanted to look.
So they gave me the first excellent prize. But it was a kind of revenge.
Yeah.
It's not, perhaps I thought my work was good.
Yeah.
I thought it was wonderful.
But I love these works, but I see what you mean, because if he was all very strict and architectural, these are very expressive, and they're ideas of structures, aren't they? They're not like accurate.
These ones
make
me think of like Brancusi.
Totally, yeah.
And
I can see Brancusi there.
I love Brancusi.
You do?
Yeah, I do.
So at this time, what artists were you looking at? Like, were there artists that excited you when you first discovered?
I didn't know any artists. I didn't know. I'll tell you, I didn't know anything. But I did. I'll tell you. I end the story, and then I had the highest prize for them. First, I was amazed. I mean, but then there was after that, the highest prize could present their work to a jury. What was it called? Olivetti, the typewriting machine. And they gave 10,000 Belgian francs to the one. And when my work, and so that was a prize for all the highest, you know,
the highest achievers.
Achievement.
Yeah.
But Muscal, the teacher, was in, and when, well, of course, I present one of those because it was my work. When he saw my work, he had that wonderful sentence and he said, "Where is the sculpture?" So I was eliminated and I never could present any work or artwork because he was in all the jury all over.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
So he sort of shut you down in a way.
Yeah. Definitely. But
Do you think that was? He just didn't like the aesthetic of it? Or is it because you're a woman?
Perhaps because he didn't like my aesthetic, and also because those teachers gave me the first prize, which...
So he was having revenge back at them.
Oh, I see.
So you became a pawn in their game.
Yeah.
I mean, it was incredible. But he was a great architect. I must admit, he
didn't take away from his own work.
Yeah.
So you touched on, you had an accident in 1969, did you say?
1969, yeah. I fell through a roof.
It was a glass roof, wasn't it?
Glass roof.
Yeah.
4.5 meters. And I broke. That's why I'm limping. It's not because I'm old. Probably I would be limping now. But I was limping. I was 35.
Yeah.
I broke my back. I didn't get in conscience. I went to they sent me to the nearest hospital. They really badly treated me. And I should have, and I had to be transferred because for my living, I'm a nurse, and that's how I got my living. I mean, I never had hardly any money from my sculpture.
No, so by day you would work as a nurse, and then at night time you'd make your sculptures and also go to that course and study art.
Yeah, not in nighttime. I mean, in between. I mean,
because between shifts. And, or
yeah, yeah,
know,
yeah,
I
yeah,
mean,
yeah.
I don't know how I did it.
You found the time.
Yeah. And then, I had that accident. It was very, very badly
treated.
Yeah. I mean, and I wanted to go make a trial. I mean, you know, but at that time in Belgium, they say if you are not a daughter of a doctor or an avocat, what's an avocat? People.
Oh, like a business person.
No.
A lawyer.
If you're not a daughter of doctor's daughter or lawyer's daughter, there's no point. Don't do it. And that's why since then I've never run. I mean, I can't run. I couldn't walk.
Yeah.
I couldn't do anything. I had to learn back walking and things like that. And it took me over a year.
Wow.
Can I ask why you was on the glass roof in the first place?
Yeah, well, I don't quite know why.
Right.
I don't quite know why.
Right.
That's a bit strange thing. I mean, because it was in my own house. I mean, I was hanging, and I remember I was hanging some...
Washing.
Yeah. My kids washing. But why? It seems quite crazy.
Yeah.
But still. And then after that, of course, it was after 68, which at that time, all normal things, I suppose it's the same thing in the UK, everything was put down. I mean, the way people were treated in the hospital, I mean, doctors and nurses, all the way teachers behave, the way the old society orders were pushed away by 68, we call the revolution, it was not because people think it was only a sexual revolution, which it was, of course.
Mm. The swinging 60s, yeah.
But it wasn't only that. It's all the environment, the way people were thinking, the way people were working, all that was put in question. And I think it was a great time.
Mm. Great time of change, wasn't it?
Yeah. Even a great change, and art was put on the table too, of course, as everything else. Mm. And then, it was a kind of time of...
great change.
Great change. And after a while, I learned to walk slowly. And Jacques and myself came to the UK, saw an exhibition of Keenholz.
Ed Keenholz.
Yeah.
And I was so impressed, you know.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I thought that was, and just before that, I made thing with tights.
Yeah.
And two little, like, there were ties and filled with woolen, the thing you have in the mattress, you know.
Yeah, like the stuffing, the kind of wool stuffing for inside a mattress.
And they were like potatoes.
Yeah.
And I showed that to friends, and they were close friends, you know, and they were horrified.
Really?
I said, what's that? And I thought it was a great thing of my life, you know. It was a discovery for me.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Then I saw Keane's exhibition, which was amazing. I mean, I couldn't believe it.
Where did you see it? What gallery was it? Can you remember?
Oh, no, I can't remember.
And what kind of work was it?
Oh, it was big, big work, you know. The mental, where they've got two beds with mental people, with the abortion, with the car accident, with the...
I've seen the one with the car and all the headlights are shining on different cars.
No, it wasn't that.
It wasn't that one,
but yeah. It was a kind of a ripped thing in a car.
Right.
And there was also a cafe, and and outside there were soldiers, American soldiers with the flag. They were quite drunk, you know. It was about the Vietnam
War,
you know.
Yeah.
And so, but for me, it was really incredible, you know. I mean, to see that.
Inspiring, It inspired you to come back. And
Totally. Yeah. You know.
And actually, I saw the five-car stud installation
that's
by
the one
King
I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's one you're talking about. I saw that in Belgium recently because Luc Tuymans, the Belgian painter, he did that incredible exhibition and he actually got them to recreate it in a huge tent in Belgium. And it was just a, you know, traumatizing, incredible, powerful artwork.
So,
because it's really big issues that he's dealing with. So it's like that really had a big
politics,
impact on you.
So that your work changed after seeing that exhibition?
Well, it was this, and then I'd make those stuff with a...
Because your work had to change after your accident as well. You couldn't work with steel, big, heavy material, right?
I just couldn't work at all. It was impossible.
So I
tried to work with soft material, and that's why I did those I took some stocking, put some stuff in it, and make like two potatoes. Well, I mean, my friends were horrified. I said, "What is she up to?" She's crazy, man. And then I went to see Keynotes after that, and he kind of conferred me that I was in a good way.
Yeah. You know?
And I went on doing, and after that, I made the Poupée Poubelle.
Yeah, so this is a series of work you made
that is
between 69 and 79.
Yeah.
What does Poupée Poubelle mean?
Poupée is doll, and Poubelle is dustbin.
So dustbin dolls.
Dustbin dolls.
That's what you called them.
But yeah, but it means that poupée is poupée, doll is doll. But dustbin means, and I always think that even now, because people tell me that I'm recycling. As a matter of fact, I'm not at all recycling. At the end of the day, perhaps I'm making new things. But I think the most important thing in my work is one thing, is always has to do with people. Even those country there.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to do with human being.
So there's a sculpture on the floor here in the apartment, which is assemblage made out of a number of pieces of cutlery. So it's got forks, knives, spoons, and they're kind of like held together, aren't they?
With a chain. Yeah.
And the chain is also covered in black fabric, partially. So you see a bit of the metal chain. Mm. We can take a picture of it and post it.
So why do you feel like your art is always very personal and about what the unique thing of being alive?
I didn't get that.
What? So you think you say your work is always about people?
Yeah.
It's very personal.
It's about people, but not a specific people, because this one, for instance, is a war. It's called War.
War, yeah.
And so we're looking at a big shell of a bombshell, isn't it?
Well, it is. Yeah. I mean, it was actually, it's a case, a suitcase, a metal suitcase, which I bought on that market, Church Market, Church Street Market, And it was a suitcase in which you could put maps in it and throw it from the plane.
Oh, wow.
I see.
So they could wrap up, roll up maps, yes. put
and
them
it would
inside.
Keep it safe and waterproof or...
And, yeah.
Right.
I mean, and there's a little sign and it's written 1943.
Wow.
And so I thought I was at that piece. I have no idea. You know, I never made plans. Or I tried things all through. So I did try to put some flowers in it. Well, of course, it didn't work at all. Mm. Then I asked a friend to make the top of it, which is like a bomb, because I thought 1943 being thrown from an air, I mean, you know.
Mm. Well, you vision bombs so, dropping, don't
yeah,
you? Yeah.
Yeah.
From the bottom of an aeroplane, yes.
And that's really interesting because you, in the house you had in Belgium, I read that you used to sort of obsessively collect found objects, materials, you know, even like dried flowers or cutlery or all these different pieces of objects. And then you would almost let them sit within the house and slowly you would create, you know,
sculptures,
like assemblages out of all these different objects. And sometimes you'd then dismantle them and then other times they'd survive and then they'd become the work.
Yeah, but that's what I'm trying to do here.
Yeah.
The only trouble in this area is everything is so clean. I mean...
Right.
So I can't find... I've got to struggle to find things, but
yeah.
I do can find things.
Yeah.
But the other thing about my work that has to do with people...
Mm.
I mean, all the meaning. And the other thing, it's because people tell me you are recycling things. And I say, I'm not recycling. I wouldn't say that. I mean, if they say it, okay, you know, I don't bother.
Yeah, yeah.
But the thing is, I think I'm kind of keeping things. What you throw away, it's what things
it's your treasure.
That you have lived. At the moment of your life, lived with.
Yes.
Yes.
So it's a kind of part of you that you are throwing away.
Yeah.
And I kind of keep those throwing things.
Yeah.
Well, of course, that's a mental, I don't know whether it's really true, but that's how
it's your,
I
your projection on these objects is what they, yeah.
Yes. And that is the memory of what they've been used for.
Mm.
And the other day I was even throwing my, you know, paper, recycling paper, and I say, oh, it's funny, I'm throwing my own letters or whatever, I mean, you know, and I realize I was doing that, you know, and I, as a matter of fact, I always say that, how do you call people who collected rubbish?
Hoarders. Oh, the rubbish collectors, refuse collectors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought, I said once, that they were the new
historians, yeah,
because they collect each day what people are throwing away.
Yeah,
but what people are throwing away, it has something to do with their own life,
like identity.
Yeah, identity, life.
Yeah,
you know.
And I think it's happened more and more and more with, if you think of like new technology.
Yeah.
Like for example, there's an old sewing machine here, but. You know, like how fast things change.
Yeah.
And then I hear that people literally will just throw, you know, technology out, like old telephones, old computer games, all these things.
Well, your mobile phone gets updated every
year. Yeah. And then there's people who actually go and search bins, don't they, to find all these things, and then they keep them
as well.
But
you go to museums now, and we're seeing mobile phones that we had when we were teenagers, and you're like, wow, that's seen as an antique now, or something of the past, like a memory of the past. And you're like,
it's interesting that urge humans have as well for the new. And that they want to somehow improve and constantly evolve and, you know.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, perhaps I'm making new thing out of old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's more a kind of, I think, survival of things that recycling, you know.
Mm.
I would say that.
So going back to the idea of people, the series you made, the Poupée Poubelle, sculptures, those were very figurative, weren't they? Because you're using like women's tights, which were kind of quite new at the time, weren't they?
Well, maybe it was...
Because you had stockings before, didn't you? But I think tights are maybe like 50 years old now or something.
No, I think they were quite common even at that time.
Right, okay.
And in the 70s because I was
because you were doing it.
Yeah, because I was doing people in the 70s.
That's right, sorry, 70, yeah, of course, yeah.
And they were quite common.
They were quite already, every day by then, yeah.
And but as after I made those two potatoes, I went on and filled stockings with old stuff because I didn't take notice of my friend. I say, well, if that doesn't happen.
You ignored that.
What would you stuff them with? What would you put inside them?
Well, haven't you seen? You haven't.
I've seen them.
Yeah,
but
I just wanted you to describe it. Yeah.
Well, I stuffed,
Russell saw the show in Margate.
I stuffed them with anything that I found, and most of those poupées poubelles are women. I did try twice to make a man.
Mm. Yeah, so you're creating a sculpture that is a kind of representation of a woman or a female figure.
Yeah, and this is that's one because although I'm interested in politics, I'm not able to do some political sculpture, which I think is very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. But this one, for instance,
this one's from 1974, and it's called Vietnam.
Vietnam. It's a doll. Here, after, first of all, I filled them with everything was soft. You know.
Yeah.
If you see the other ones,
They
are soft.
Yeah, so you had like kind of mattress filling.
Yeah.
You had like
feathers,
threads,
afterwards,
shells.
I put some mannequin in it.
Some what?
Mannequins.
Oh,
like a shop store mannequin.
Right.
So this one has the kind of upper torso of a shop mannequin in a female shape.
And that was a woman. And that was, it's called Vietnam because of the Vietnam War. Yeah. And that was a woman and all her children, or even perhaps it was not all, but children were killed and dead.
To represent the children, you have these kind of toy dolls.
Yeah.
Which are like vintage toy dolls.
Yeah. And it was at the bottom of her. She was overlooking them.
Yeah.
But they were dead. I mean, they were...
Did you show these works at the time? That were you able to put them in a gallery?
Well, the first time I showed the work was it... because at that time, I forgot about that. At that time, it was woman movement.
Liberation.
Yeah, like feminism.
Yes.
And that was incredible. I'm a feminist.
Yeah.
That's for sure. But I'm not very dynamic. I mean, I will say I'm a feminist. I've got friends who are very...
outspoken, like proud, very vocal.
Yeah, but I'm talk about it. I'm very proud of it.
Yeah.
But I'm not very active, let's say.
Gotcha.
I wonder what I'm doing about my art, but... But I was a nurse too, but I'm not very active in any movement, but I totally agree, and I did agree. It was a wonderful time. And when there was the first demonstration it was in 71. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if it was 71 or 72. I put two poupées poubelles in a place where all the women were
walking past.
Oh, wow.
I remember perfectly where it was.
Like in a street, outdoors?
No, it was indoors, but, well, it was... you could see from the outdoor, but all the women were there. C'est Passage 44, I mean, everyone knows that in Belgium, in Brussels.
Yeah.
And they were there. And after that, I was invited by the Women's Association because it was... just a growing movement, you know, the liberation. And they invited me to have an exhibition of the poupée poubelle.
Wow.
And that was amazing. With another friend, which she's a painter, Anne Thirion, and she's a friend. But there were loads of poupée poubelle, and I showed them. And of course, my friends were very active feminists.
Yeah.
I will tell to anyone I'm a feminist, but I'm not active.
Yeah,
no,
I understand. Yeah.
You know, and
did your friends like the work? Hmm? Did your friends like the work?
Oh yeah, that was just amazing, and you know. And then at that time, when I showed it, I was so much insulted by men that were horrified.
Really?
They said, "How disgusting! How could I show women like that?" And women generally, they thought it was wonderful, you know.
Mm. Wow.
And that's what makes me think of the difference this time at Margate, where I was very, very pleased to show them once more, how men were open to them as well as women, you know.
So like 45 years later...
Yeah.
Now it's changed, yeah.
Almost 50 years
later. Almost 50 years later, yeah.
How amazing. It changed, you know. But
what was it like seeing them again in Margate?
Well, it was... I wasn't totally surprised. I mean, I was surprised in one way that it was asked to be exhibited, you know, I mean, somehow.
Yes, so the invitation was a surprise.
Yeah, the invitation was a... amazing surprise and lovely. I loved it, you know.
Yeah.
And but to see them, although I've been making such a different work ever since, of course, you know.
Yeah.
I recognize myself in them, you know, somehow. So I wasn't totally surprised, you know.
Yeah.
Had you seen them prior to that, or had they been like stored away for a while?
No, I think I did exhibition. Yeah, I did exhibition in meantime, you know.
Yeah.
Izzy Brachot, she exhibitioned me. Mm. And
I remember when you were making these as well, you used to store them in an attic, didn't you? And you had like a kind of room in the house that would have all the characters leaning up.
That's where I stored them.
Where you stored them?
In the attic. And my children... told me, but quite lately now, and they are over 50, that they scare them.
Of the dustbin dolls hanging around in the house. Yeah.
It was in the attic. You know? You've seen a picture.
Yeah, there's amazing pictures. Yeah, in the Marianne Barron sculptures book, I think there's some here, where you can actually see them. And
so, how do you feel like now with these works in that show? There was an artist, you know, Louise Bourgeois' work and Sarah Lucas's work, who kind of. Bizarrely, like after you, but in other parts of the world, were making work that was very kind of the
but
same.
I was, because I saw the title of Louise. I mean, I love Louise Bourgeois.
Yeah.
I don't like, I can't bear her spider. I can't
bear
her.
Find it too scary,
really.
But I saw lots and lots of work, wonderful, I mean, incredible work.
Yeah.
And I really think, I don't know much of Lucas' work. I don't know much of it, I mean, you know. But what surprised me is that Louise Bourgeois' work of the tide was quite late.
Yeah, very.
I mean, much later. I mean, I was in the early 70s.
Yeah.
And she made it quite late in her life.
Yeah.
And that surprised me. And there were more structure.
Mm.
Yes.
You know.
More finished, more like.
Finished. I mean, men were kind of thrown away.
Even the fact that your ones sat on chairs, I read that you that was kind of like something that happened because they were very difficult to actually sit up. So, you know, to get these sculptures to actually stand up or sit up
to have personalities,
was almost impossible. So you had to lean them on something. And that then led to using little stools or chairs, which also Sarah Lucas did later. But it could have also been a concern for her because using that material, maybe something that happens is you start thinking you don't want to put them on a plinth because that would just look odd.
But don't you want to animate them as
well? You animate them and make them more human.
Did you give them names?
Maybe that was a strange coincidence.
Did you ever name them or...? Each one, did they have names, like women's names?
Not each one of them. Some of them. The bride.
The bride, yeah.
The bride. Or la veuve is the widow. There's one called Mother and Child, I think. But normally,
Mother and Child. We had that one in Margate in the corner, where you have a kind of younger baby, like linked to the older figure.
And most of, well, once more, that represent. Woman, I mean, mainly, you know.
Yeah.
And with the thing that they used, or, well, not always, but I mean, it's things of ordinary life, of daily life, should I say.
Yeah,
you know?
Everyday life, yeah.
Yeah, everyday life, yeah.
And then you bring them into a new combination that somehow creates something really powerful.
probably.
Yeah,
I hope
well,
so.
Well, I think so.
Yes. I hope so.
And what about the time when you were having a studio that was in a kind of old train station?
Oh, yeah.
I love that story. And people used to come in and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I used to live in a very posh council. I mean, is it council?
Like an estate?
Not an estate.
Community or something?
Hammersmith, Ealing, what are those?
Oh, like a kind of district?
A district.
County,
yeah.
Or, something.
County yeah. or town, yeah. 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 yeah.
And there was a station, a tiny station, which Delvaux, well, I don't like Delvaux much as right. a painter, but I mean, don't say it to anyone.
Oh, okay.
But don't say it to anyone. You know?
yeah.
But I mean, he was a wonderful man because I met him, but he had a studio there in that, and I asked, no, he painted the station, what am I doing? And then I asked the railway, because in that concert, the railway station belongs to the railways, and I asked the railway, could I rent your station?
Yeah.
It was a tiny, tiny station.
And it had a ticket office, didn't it?
Yeah, they had a ticket office, but that was taken off.
Yeah.
And I could go from the door, the front door, I could go through to the station, to the platform, mm-hmm. gate platform, you know, train platform.
Yeah.
And then they put things that I couldn't, you know, things doing with train because I could provoke an accident. And so, but why am I telling you that story? I can't remember. What
was I
was
question? Just interested in that time when
did
you had
people
studio.
Come and visit you thinking
oh, yeah.
they were...
And then there were all, I mean, you know, it's like a studio. If you, here is very neat because I did it especially for you.
Thank
but
you.
If you see next door, I mean, the studio is full of stuff. And
yeah, quite like, chaotic, especially with you because you collect yeah, so many I mean, found objects. Yeah. And,
totally chaotic.
Yeah.
And then people came in, they went in the front door and they said, could we please have a ticket to go to... I was totally amazed. I said, well, I'm sorry, I'm not selling tickets anymore. But I mean, I didn't believe it because it was surrounded by old stuff and that don't seem to...
They weren't fazed at all.
As if it would be normal to sell tickets. I mean, I didn't have
with a lot of, like, assemblage around everywhere, like bits and bobs. Wow.
Yeah, I mean there were all sorts of... You couldn't wow. imagine. I mean, yeah.
Do you make work every day?
No.
How often do you do it?
Well, I make quite a lot of collage, and I can show you
yeah,
some
yeah,
of
yeah.
it. I mean,
and they're found images, or is it things you photograph?
Well, just,
or
those have nothing. Well, it's a different. You can have a look at it. Yeah. It's different. It's nothing to do
oh,
with.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, because you've made kind of books, haven't you, which are like notebooks, which are filled with collages.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And when you turn the page, it kind of ends up telling a huge story. And you sometimes use crayon and paint and different elements.
Wow.
Yeah,
and they're
paper.
Quite minimal. They're very minimal.
Are they?
Yeah. Well, these ones at the beginning especially, these feel very minimal.
Yeah, but these, it's, you know, because that date, I mean, this one is last year, I mean, you know.
14th of April 2019.
Well, my work is much more minimal than it was.
Than it was back
in
the
60s. Would you describe yourself as a minimalist or a
no,
surrealist?
No, I wouldn't.
A Duchampian? Duchampian, like Duchamp, Marcel Duchamp used the ready-made and
And as a matter of fact, I don't understand. I try to understand Marcel Duchamp because I've got friends. Thierry de Duve, I suppose you know him. He's a very famous philosopher, art philosopher. Mm-hmm. He now lives, he's Belgian, but he lives in the States. Mm-hmm. And he wrote about Duchamp. But no, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say. I mean, no, I wouldn't say. I wouldn't say at all. I mean, minimalist. Do you think I'm a minimalist?
But looking at your sketchbook, I'd say this is quite minimal. It makes me think of Richard Tuttle as well. Richard Tuttle's work,
yeah.
where it's quite mark making and quite simple, but I absolutely love this. This is beautiful.
I love these books and I love the accumulation of them.
Beautiful.
And then you have like fabric elements. Three buildings. Wow. So these are three.
One's from like a Band-Aid plaster.
Yeah. And that's a street, you know, a building. Wow. Well, I'm making things with anything I found.
That's cute.
And that's cute. Look, it's high school.
This looks like this could be a dustbin doll. This could be a character there. So then can we take up to 2014 about a show you had that was quite a big moment in your life when you was at the Jewish Museum in Belgium?
Oh, yeah, but I had few show. I had a very big show. I had a very big show at the... Grand Hornu,
which is a big museum. Big museum as well, yeah. What year was that?
2005.
So that was 2005. But up until that point, you hadn't really done loads of exhibitions, had you?
No, I didn't. You know, I'm a bit known as an artist in the French part of Belgium.
Yeah, the French-speaking Belgium.
Hardly known... Well, some people know about it because I've been working for so long.
Yes,
but
yeah.
I don't quite... I'm very cross and angry and, you know, to be so little recognized, even in my own
country. To be overlooked, yeah.
Not at all, I mean, you know, because it's very well that Lucas is known, you know, but I've been doing people long before her, you know, I think it's very good that she's known, you know. Everyone should be. And of course, I had more exposure. I've got friends who didn't have at all exhibition. But at the same time, I don't think I'm recognized for my work, which has been over 50 years, you know.
And that was what was such a joy with the Gossamer show, was I felt like a lot of people were discovering you. Mm. Yeah. And also it's a bit like there's a lot of kind of re-evaluation at the moment in the art world, where people are kind of filling in gaps that were missing and kind of starting to recognise, you know, unheard voices.
Especially lately in the UK, but elsewhere as well, is old woman artists are recognized suddenly, which is a wonderful thing. I mean, you know, but I mean, at last, I mean, you know, because we did some work and some of them are very good. They're not all of them good, but I mean, and of course, I think men artists should be recognized as well.
But
generally, they are more recognized than women artists, which are not.
So, what is your dream now? What would you like to
I'll have to have an exhibition at the Tate.
Yes.
Definitely. Yeah. Or New York, you know.
Yeah, somewhere in New York, yeah.
Or I would love to have a big exhibition. I've got so much work, you know. I'm not at all modest about my work. I think it's worthwhile and it's really wonderful contemporary art world.
Yeah.
And that's what I say. You know, I'm not boasting. I really think that.
Yeah, yeah. No, you really believe in it.
I do believe it. And that's why I was so pleased to be invited by you.
Yeah, no, sure. It's been such a joy to work with you. I've loved it.
So we ask every guest that comes on, we ask, I guess, every two questions. The first question is, if you could do an art heist, if you could steal a work of art from anywhere in the world, your touchstone artwork,
and
what would it be and why?
It could be anything. It can be big or small.
Well, I love Brancusi.
Yeah.
I like West.
Franz West,
yes.
I love Franz West. And I like... Oh, I think I'll see his work there.
Oh, yeah, you've got your library here of books.
Is he a painter or a
sculptor? He's a painter, but he did lovely sculpture, small sculpture.
Yeah.
And I can't remember. And he's English.
Yeah.
And he had an exhibition lately. And the sculpture are not very big, but he did...
Where was the exhibition?
Gosmark, somewhere on Bond Street.
Oh, right.
Oh, somewhere on Bond Street. What, an institution or a like a private...
No, a gallery. Like a gallery.
Goss. Like Spruce Magers or something like that? Or...
No, not that. Goss.
Goss.
Gagosian?
Gagosian, no.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Gagosian.
It's not Basquiat. I've seen your books you've got up there. So you've got a book on him,
yeah.
Have you?
I mean, no, just what the... I love David Hockney.
Yes.
But I love that man. Really, I can't believe it. I mean, you know, I'm really stupid.
Rob, stand up there and shout out some artists.
Yeah. As Ava Hesse.
Ava Hesse, no, that's it.
Fishley and Vice.
Oh, yeah, I love them too.
Yeah.
Calder. Who? Alexander Calder.
Yeah, Calder I love too. But I mean, a contemporary one.
Sean Scully.
Wolfgang
Tillmans.
Jimmy Durham.
I discovered Mark Nelson, which
Mark.
Really
yeah, Mark Nelson's amazing.
Amazing,
yes.
You've got Ed Ruscha.
What?
Yeah. I'm trying to think who's like done small sculptures and paintings.
Peter Kinley?
Yeah, Peter Kinley. But that small.
Yeah,
there's a small, tiny little thing. Oh.
Perfect. Like the flyer there by the Franz West one. Can you see that? Oh, that's, is this a guy?
Yeah.
Cy Twombly. Yes, the sculptures. Yes, and the paintings. Yes. Well, he's very mark making. I can see from your sketchbook Cy Twombly's influence in some ways, or the fact that you share the same sort of dialogue.
I didn't think that, but I mean, maybe. But I love
actually thought, you know, your initial early Maison sculptures, like the early house kind of architectural work you made. Yeah. I was thinking about Franz West when I saw those, so that's quite interesting.
I love
Franz West, yeah.
I love him, really.
Cool.
But lots of...
lots of different artists you like.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then the other question we ask every guest is...
Yeah, what is your favourite colour?
Green.
Oh, why is that? You've got green eyes, haven't you?
No, I would love to, but...
you have amazing green boots. I remember your...
There's a bit of green in it.
There is green.
But you've got blue one.
Very blue, yes.
I've got brown. But I remember you had really great green boots that you wore a lot.
And you're wearing really great trousers. Red boots now.
Yeah.
You're not afraid of colour.
You often wear colour all together.
Yeah.
I've noticed that with you.
Yeah.
Colour wear all green or all red.
People told me that I had the sense of colour. I don't know, perhaps it's... bad sense of
colour. No. I think it's amazing. You look incredible.
It's an individual sense of colour.
Yeah, I love green. Yeah, I think that's my favourite. Yeah.
And why green?
Well, that's a question I didn't ask myself. But, of course, I would say because there are loads of shades of green, but of course, there are loads of other colours too, so it doesn't work. Mm. So I have to find something else. I have no idea why.
Sometimes you can't explain things like that, though. Mm. I think it's just, wonderful.
Which is your favourite?
My favourite colour, blue. I guess my eyes. I don't know, but I'm always drawn. I'm wearing a lot of blue today. I don't know what it is about it. I feel like it's the sky, the sea gives a bit of depth. I think it feels. I like grey as well as a colour. So tonally, I kind of. I'm drawn to those colours.
I've always loved orange because I find it the most positive colour. I find if I wear orange, I feel really uplifted and quite driven. Yeah.
And I've got a friend who went to the pub and she loves orange. And even she found a toilet paper orange.
Oh my gosh, she really loves orange. Really
just upset. Orange toilet paper.
You couldn't believe it, but she's really...
Well, so now you're living in London. That's always been a big fantasy of yours to come back here. What is London giving you for your art? How is it?
Perhaps I'm doing smaller piece than I used to because I haven't got a studio, which I would love to have. But I think in my life, that's over 50 years work from the 60s onwards, I've been working from the 60s onwards. I more often didn't have a studio than have a studio. Mm. But I did have some studio. But here, it's a bit... I'm working here in my sitting room, And it's... I like to have a studio. But London... I think it's funny to say I feel free. Here. But when I say that, I wasn't in prison, in Belgium either, you know, but just the same. It makes me feel freer, perhaps.
Yeah. But that's quite a powerful state
creatively,
of mind.
Creatively, yeah.
You know, if a place can make you feel that, yeah. It's a great thing, isn't it?
So yeah. We need to get you a big studio, a Tate show, Tate Retrospective, yeah. And a show in New York.
Yeah.
That's good what we're times. Doing. So instead of an art heist, we're going to get you an art yeah. show.
We're going to run out and plan. Get you a show, yeah. Exactly.
Yes, yeah, yes, yeah, yes. Yeah.
Well, I think I would love to. I mean, you know, really, I would love to.
Well, anyway, thank you so much for coming on Talk Up, Marianne. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Marianne. It's been incredible. And for images of all artworks we've discussed in today's episode, you can visit our Instagram mm-hmm. at TalkArt.
And you can also look on the CarlFriedman.com website. Is yeah. it CarlFriedman.com?
Yeah, CarlFriedman.com. And you can see images from the Gossamer exhibition, which included Marianne's work. And it's been so wonderful to spend time with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much to both of you.
And we will be back very soon.
Yes.
Thanks.
Big love. Bye.
Okay, bye. Bye.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamond and Russell Tovey.
Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in today's episode, with music by Jack Northover.
Subscribe to Talk Art at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts.
Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.